Wrigley's Spearmint Gum presents The Howard Miller Show. And now here with music on records is Howard Miller.
Thank you very much, Joe Foss, and once again for Wrigley Spearmint Chewing Gum from Chicago, Illinois, where the weatherman says about 8 inches of snow today. We're sort of trying to keep warm and merry in the studio, and it's not too difficult an enterprise because today we are privileged indeed to present one of the outstanding gentlemen of show business, a man who comes to our studio today with a long list of successes as a motion picture performer, and a gentleman who has as a background a great war career. How better could he possibly serve in the role of the Spirit of St. Louis, playing the part of Charles Augustus Lindbergh, than with this tremendous background as an actor, a man, and a soldier? Today our guest is Jimmy Stewart, the star of the great Warner Brother picture, The Spirit of St. Louis. We're going to have an opportunity of talking to Jimmy, and you across our vast network of stations from coast to coast and in Canada will meet a tremendous personality when we present an interview live now, Jimmy Stewart. Right after we listen to a little bit of a song by Jackie Jocko called Haunted Lover.
Every evening long about midnight, get that feeling something just ain't right. Then I look for you and discover you're gone and I'm a haunted lover. When you left, you knew it would hurt me. Did you have to go and desert me? My shadow's running for cover. You're gone and I'm a haunted lover. Oh, how your memory keeps on sneaking up behind me, trying to remind me that I played the fool. I sit alone here and wonder why it took so long to discover you're gone and I'm a haunted lover. Oh, how your memory keeps on sneaking up behind me. Frantic lover.
That's a fine new one by Jackie Jocko. It's on the label Vic, and it's called Haunted Lover. Just a very brief word for Wrigley Spearmint Chewing Gum, and because our setting today is the flight of the Spirit of St. Louis, the airplane built by Ryan Monoplane and was flown to Europe by Mr. Lindbergh then in those days before he was an Army man, I think that I can best say that Wrigley Spearmint was very much in evidence and on the scene when Mr. Lindbergh made the flight to Paris. And it has been ever since, as it always will be, because people have come to understand the quality and the wisdom of the enjoyment of Wrigley Spearmint. Because when you enjoy Wrigley Spearmint, remember, you're protecting your health in a way, because Wrigley Spearmint aids digestion. It keeps your teeth clean and attractive and keeps your breath always sweet. So I hope that back in those days, I know it happened, and in the days to come, I know it'll always happen, that people will enjoy Wrigley Spearmint. We hope that you will, too. I suppose that there's about 20 million people saying, get off the air, Howard, so Jimmy Stewart can say something. We'll recognize his voice. Jimmy, will you say something?
No, I certainly will, Howard. You're talking about that 8 inches of snow. It sure isn't here yet, is it?
No, it isn't. Now, you were telling me just a moment ago before we went on the air that you just flew commercially out here from Hollywood and that you noticed a tremendous amount of snow along the way. Where was it heaviest from what your vantage point was?
Never have seen so much snow. The snow, all we came by way of Denver, Omaha, And that whole part of the country is covered with a tremendous blanket of snow.
Jimmy, the purpose of your being here and the purpose of your being in 16 cities in the next 18 days, is that the right figures?
Yeah, that's about it.
Is, of course, in the interest of a great motion picture which you've made for the Warner Brothers people, The Spirit of St. Louis. And I think it's paradoxical that your birth date fell on the day that Mr. Lindbergh flew across the broad expanse of the Atlantic. This is a strange coincidence, isn't it?
Yes, it is. As a matter of fact, while we were doing the picture, we got to play a sort of a game, because everybody sort of that age bracket seems to know exactly what they were doing May the 20th and 21st, 1927, when Lindbergh made the flight.
Yes.
And I'm one of them. I know exactly what I was doing. And you're right, my birthday was May 20th, but I was working in my dad's hardware store, and I made a sort of a part of the world out of beaver board and put the Eiffel Tower in one place and the Woolworth Building in the other, and sort of gave the people that were looking in the window to the knives and the hammers and nails that were on display then, gave them sort of a blow-by-blow description as Lindbergh progressed across the Atlantic.
Or to count, you charted the flight of the little monoplane. Well, certainly, we've got to go back into history just a little bit then and talk about that early beginning for you. And actually, it's not history. It's only a very few years ago that you were a young boy and watched that epic-making flight. Where was the hardware store, Jimmy?
Indiana, Pennsylvania.
Had you had some aspirations then towards acting, or was it strictly flying that you were interested in as a boy?
No, I hadn't thought much about acting, but I think probably I can't remember when I haven't been interested in flying.
Mm-hmm. As a result, of course, you flew in the war. You came out with a tremendous record as a pilot. You have recently been recommended by the President of the United States to the Congress to assume the rank of Brigadier General in our United States Air Force. Well, now, you flew then as a youth, but where did the transition come between these teen years and you're becoming a motion picture star? You weren't born to stardom. How did it happen?
Well, first I went to college. I did some dramatics in college. I got mixed up with a stock company with a crowd called the University Players the summer after I graduated from college, and went to Falmouth, Massachusetts, got a small part in a play that went to New York, and was in New York for about 4 years on Broadway, and the bug bit me. And I've been in it ever since.
Is there any better foundation for an acting career in Hollywood than Broadway first, Jimmy? I presume not. That's very important, isn't it?
It certainly is. Of course, I think now there's a wonderful sort of training ground for all types of acting, and that's television.
Yes. This is the new media for the youngsters, the aspirants to pick up careers. Well, now, Jimmy, stories come out of Hollywood, and they're not press agentry dreams, that give you credit for that which we have always recognized, a tremendous integrity for a portrayal of a role. Now, it's understandable how you could have integrity for the role of Mr. Deeds, because it's a mythical character. But here now you were playing the part of a human being, a live individual who had achieved history. How did you go about studying for the role of Charles Augustus Lindbergh?
Well, I had a tremendous advantage in this particular instance. I've done quite a few of these, biographies, film biographies. But in this case, I imagine that this man, Lindbergh, has been photographed and has more film of his activities than almost anybody in the world. So that it was a great help in trying to figure out how much of Lindbergh to try to portray. To just get into a projection room and run all this newsreel, I imagine I looked at 50,000 feet of newsreel and film of all kinds, and it gave a pretty good picture of the man from a pictorial point of view. Mm-hmm. His movements around an airplane, the way he got into an airplane, the way he walked, the way he operated when he was in the cockpit, his procedures and everything. And I felt that this was important. I didn't want to make it so that it was a caricature, but I also felt very strongly that I should try to keep as much of Jimmy Stewart out of this as I could.
Well, of course, you had the physical attributes of Lindbergh. I imagine that your height is not unlike his.
No, we're about the same height.
Are you?
About the same height.
Maybe you're a little bit taller. You, of course, have the slim bill that was required in those days to sneak into a monoplane because they just weren't very roomy. Now, the actual shooting itself, was Lindbergh there as a consultant at any time, or did you follow closely his written word in the book, which is a Pulitzer Prize winner?
Yes, well, we followed pretty closely the book. This was a demand of his, and I don't blame him. As far as him being around the set, he was there from time to time, but he wasn't what we call in the movies a technical advisor.
Mm-hmm.
We had a man that was very capable in doing that, a man by the name of Bud Gurney, who is now a United Airlines pilot on the run from Los Angeles to Honolulu. He knew Lindbergh very well, even before the flight. He knew him when they were in the old barnstorming days. He knew him when they were working for the Robinson Aircraft Company in St. Louis. They were instructing, and they were flying the mail from St. Louis to Chicago, and knew him very well. And Bud was of great help to us as a technical man.
It never ceases to amaze me, the integrity that many Hollywood producers have for carrying out an epic like this, completely in keeping with what actually happened. I was interested in seeing a screening that Frank Casey here of Warner Brothers had for some of the press the other day. The way that all of these shots were made from, it would be the starboard side of the airplane, wouldn't it? And your hair had to be parted in a specific way so that when the shot was made from that direction, it would exactly portray Mr. Lindbergh. Is this typical of most Hollywood productions, Jimmy, or is this unusual?
Well, I think we had a particular problem in this picture because the actual happenings of the flight are so well known all over the country and by a very discriminating audience, the people that are interested in flying, pilots and airline people, that we just couldn't afford to make very many mistakes.
Or you'd really get letters.
But then we also had a problem. We couldn't make this a documentary. This isn't a documentary. This is a dramatization of this part of this man's life.
Mm-hmm.
A documentary, it's very easy to do that. All we do is just sort of make a newsreel type enactment of what happened during the flight, so that we had to create a few things that weren't exactly as it happened, but they were near enough to the actual fact that Lindbergh didn't object to them, and they added to the actual interest and the dramatic content of the picture.
Well, now, Jimmy, you've checked out on multiple craft, multiple engine craft, and also fighter planes. Don't you think it's all the more to this man's credit that he had the courage to step into a monoplane like the Spirit of St. Louis and fly across the ocean? I think I'd be a little bit querulous about wanting to do it in four engines.
Well, every time I get into the thing, it amazes me more that one man could do this so long ago. Actually, as far as he was concerned, there wasn't any doubt in his mind. He had complete faith in the airplane.
Yes.
Of course, he had complete faith in aviation, which is one of the things that we try to depict and we try to put into this picture, because I don't think there's any doubt about it that this man, by this deed, introduced aviation to the world.
Mm.
Before that, before 1927, before the flight, the airplane was more or less considered a weapon of war. It was considered a means for stunt people, for daredevils, to thrill crowds at county fairs and so on.
And now it's a part of regular life.
This flight convinced people that it could be a mode of transportation. So in a way, the flight affected the lives of everybody in the world.
Jimmy, I want to thank you very much for being here. I know that Mr. Patterson, president of United Airlines, has graciously given his airplane so that you fire on these 18 cities. And to all the cities, I say you're going to meet a real treat in Jimmy Stewart. Thank you very much. This is Howard Miller from Chicago. Goodbye for now.
This is the CBS Radio Network.